Good morning and welcome to the Talking City podcast. My name is Seb Parks and I'm standing in for Joe Bray today. And I'm delighted to be joined by a sun-kissed Simon Bykowski. Simon, where the hell are you?
Yeah, I'm in my hotel room with the curtains drawn pretty far because the sun is absolutely streaming in. It's a lovely day in Madrid.
So you're in Madrid. What brings you to Madrid, Simon? What is possibly happening in Madrid?
Well, there's quite a big game on. I met a lovely man at the train station because I was completely inept at buying the ticket that I wanted to buy. And it turns out he's a big Barcelona fan. So that's why we're here. We're here to meet football fans and see how much they love Pep Guardiola.
Excellent. Well, let's kick off the podcast with reflection from the weekend. Manchester City went to Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace are a bit of a bogey team for City. I think in the last five games, City have won two of the five. They've drawn two, lost one. But Crystal Palace are one of them teams that always seem to go ahead against City, or they definitely always seem to score and put a spanner in the works of City's title challenge. And it was no different on Saturday, 12:30 kickoff side. Crystal Palace took the lead. Just run us through the game, run us through the key moments down in South London.
Yeah, it was a bit of a crazy game. Not really sort of the control that you usually see from City. Palace scored very early on. And Kevin De Bruyne equalised very early on as well. I think we were 13 minutes in and it was 1-1. Stones had given the ball away for the Palace goal and De Bruyne then just sort of pulled something out of the bag after some decent play from Grealish. And it went into the break 1-1 somehow, despite Rodri throwing in what must be his worst half in years. It was bizarre to see. He was like, he passed at one point to Mateta inside the six-yard box and Ortega needed to Cruyff turn his way out of trouble. To stop City from sort of giving the Palace striker the ball in their six-yard box. And he really wasn't on it and City were sort of quite good in attack. It was a changed team. Phil Foden on the bench after his hat-trick in midweek. Oscar Bob was in, Rico Lewis was in. So Pep, after saying that they couldn't afford to lose points in the Premier League, sort of wasn't afraid to mix it up. Obviously, kind of De Bruyne and Haaland and Stones were back in, but it was 1-1 at half time, and you're kind of thinking City just need to win this game like 3-1. That's what City need to do. 2 minutes into the second half, Rico Lewis scores. More good work from Grealish, and then more good work from Grealish sees De Bruyne playing Haaland for his third. For City's third and Haaland's sort of first goal in a while. So that was quite good. And then De Bruyne smacks in a fourth. More kind of not great defending sees Palace get a consolation. But 4-2, which considering the turnaround after Villa, was very, very good. Guardiola said afterwards, like, you know, they were kind of too tired to be able to defend as they normally would, which, you know, take what you want from that, but it did seem like they were not at their best, but they scored four goals and, you know, that can only be a good thing for these big games coming up because you always want City to be sort of in goal-scoring form.
So we've run through the game, run through what happened. Now, let's take a deeper dive, Si. When you saw that team sheet, you saw that Phil Foden had been benched after scoring a hat-trick against Aston Villa. What were your immediate thoughts on that?
I probably just thought back to the Friday press conference where Pep was saying, I cannot afford to have any eyes on Madrid because we must get a result against Crystal Palace. And you kind of thought, well, Phil Foden looks like he's got an eye on Madrid or two eyes on Madrid and Bernardo Silva, who'd also been rested. But kind of in a way, we've said it for ages. We've been waiting for sort of this, some statement performances from City and some statement wins. And, you know, not the biggest opposition, but Aston Villa and Crystal Palace in a week. To beat Villa without Haaland and De Bruyne and then to beat Palace without your man of the moment who's just scored a hat-trick. It's scored more Premier League goals in 2024 than any other player, Phil Foden. And Pep said, yeah, we really need to win this game. You're sitting on the bench so you can be fresh for Madrid. So it's been a really, really good week for City. And obviously with Liverpool dropping points against United, there's now just 1 point separating them from Liverpool and Arsenal. And it feels like they are more in the title race, and it feels like they're sort of in a better position.
What did you make of Liverpool's performance then? So just, you touched upon that then. Liverpool obviously failed to beat Manchester United to cement their place back at the top of the table. Do you think that Guardiola's decision to rest, shall we say, Foden for the Real Madrid game has sort of paid dividend, given the fact that Liverpool failed to beat United? Is there a sort of benefit to that in Pep's mind, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you never know, I would say. You know, we spoke to Rico Lewis afterwards. I spoke to Jack Grealish after as well. He was terrific. But Rico was saying, you know, it's fatal if you drop points at this stage. And on the flip side of that, when you win, it feels really big. It feels huge. And City winning as the first game put pressure on Arsenal at Brighton, put pressure on Liverpool at United. You can't say that Liverpool didn't get the result at United because City had won. But maybe if City hadn't won, they might have played with a bit kind of, I don't know, a bit more freedom or a bit less pressure. I mean, nobody can explain how Erik ten Hag keeps getting results. But you sort of thought they might just get a result against Liverpool, you know, and they did. And the important thing is kind of that goal difference is maybe out the window now. You know, if City win all their games remaining, they just need Arsenal, Liverpool to draw, and they will win the league by a point. So it's for all the talk of sort of, oh, goal difference will be really important, that Liverpool result means that they're no longer 3 points ahead of City. They're only one, so only needs one more slip from Liverpool for City to overtake them on points. Which is, again, it just feels like City are closer to the top.
Just looking back on the Palace game then, and looking back on Kevin De Bruyne's performance, you gave him a 9 out of 10. Just in comparison to his performance against Arsenal, what do you think were the notable differences between City's performance in both games? Obviously, Palace are nowhere near the same threat as Arsenal. We get that. But do you feel that City went into the Arsenal game a little bit apprehensive, whereas against Villa, they were their usual selves? Or do you feel that they played the same, but Arsenal were just so much better prepared?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because Arsenal were both very prepared and very defensive. You know, they were more defensive than Palace were, and they're a much better team than Palace. You know, it feels like Arsenal came for a point and they got a point. And, you know, if they win the league with that, then fair play to them. But it was, it wasn't a team that was kind of, it was a team looking to contain rather than a team looking to sort of punish City, whereas Palace tried and had success with punishing City. They just couldn't, well, they didn't have the personnel to be able to keep City out. And especially when, it's funny because I didn't think De Bruyne played that well, but he scored two goals, got an assist, and he's won them the game, basically. So where do you go? It was one of those games that suited De Bruyne because of the pace of it. And I think there will be plenty of those games left in the sort of final eight games are we on now? Final eight games. So I can see him having a big say in the title race.
Do you think that Pep's use of rotation midweek against Villa has, again, paid dividend to that? Do you think that you'll see more of the team that played against Villa play against Real Madrid? I mean, we'll talk about this a bit later on, but do you feel that you'll see a mixture, or do you see that starting 11 is the starting 11 for Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think it'll be a mix, really. You know, you've got to keep De Bruyne and Haaland in and Stones. But obviously the likes of Foden and Silva will come back in. I thought Grealish was really good, and he spoke to us after the game, and he rarely speaks to us, but when he does, he's so good. And he was sort of speaking about how he struggled this season to sort of come back from the treble and to see how we can sort of, I think he said, how can I ever have that kind of happiness again, which is remarkably deep. And, you know, he was saying he was watching the Netflix documentary, and, you know, he was getting emotional at the final episode in Istanbul. But he said it all also made him think, you know, he's getting older. He's never going to be as young as he is now, and he's not got that many years left to play in the Champions League and to try and win it again. So he has massively struggled sort of mentally this season. And for all the kind of conclusions that were drawn from the pitch side rant that Pep had with him after Arsenal, he said Pep has been the man who has pulled him through this season and, you know, supported him when he's really needed it. He feels like he's ready to do it again and sort of go again. And, you know, he was like, I played well today, but everyone's obsessed with goals and assists, and I didn't get any despite kind of making four goals, essentially. But I feel like I'm, you know, ready to really help the team. And I think he will be really, really needed against Madrid tonight. So I think that could be, you know, a big advantage that City really haven't had much this season.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk a bit more about the Real Madrid game in part three when we preview the game. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back to talk about Simon's travels all the way from Manchester to Madrid. Welcome back to the Talking City podcast. I've done it again, Si, where I say city. That's really irritating.
You please the American viewers.
I don't know why I say it. But anyway, welcome back to the Talking City podcast. Simon, you're over in Madrid, as we've established. So let's talk about that trip. What time did you have to get up yesterday to get a flight to Madrid to get that press conference at midday?
Yeah, I was going to say you sounded like it was making out like it was a bit of a trek at the end of part one, but it was a bit of a trek. Time was I up? I was up at 3 to get a 6 a.m. flight to Brussels and then a 45-minute connection on to Brussels to Madrid, which was as smooth as you can hope for in these things. And so smooth. We were a bit late landing, which meant that I had to get a taxi rather than get the train to Real Madrid's training ground. But I still got there in time for their press conference with Carlo Ancelotti and Tony Rudiger, and I also got there in time for it, despite it being 15 minutes early. So, I had a very, very good morning of plain sailing, really.
Well, Simon, one thing I want to do now is just want to plug the sponsor for today's podcast, and that is NordVPN. We've been holding this off simply because I've been waiting for you to travel. So one thing you weren't prepared for in this podcast is for this conversation. So I want to say it to you as if you're a listener. But did you know that NordVPN allows you to have the cybersecurity that you need when traveling and allows you to encrypt your data to make sure that if you're on public Wi-Fi when you're in Brussels or you're in Madrid, wherever you are, that your data is safe? Now, I know that you personally have a work laptop that will protect you from that generally, but if you were traveling on your phone or on your personal devices, NordVPN could allow you to watch programs from countries that are generally geo-restricted. So if you've got Netflix, for example, you'd be able to log into British Netflix if you're over in America for the city tour or wherever that may be in the summer. But listeners, if you are interested in joining NordVPN, you can sign up now using the link down in the description, which is nordvpn.com/talkingcity. If you sign up to a 2-year plan, you get 4 months free. But the beauty of it is it's completely free to try. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. So, yeah, check that out in the description. And Simon, I'm going to set you up with a NordVPN account. So next time you are traveling, when Arsenal get beat by Bayern Munich, and you head over to Germany, that you can benefit from it as well. So, but on that, what is the weather like over there at the minute?
It's very, very sunny. If I look this way, I'm blinded by the sun. Yeah, it was a bit rainy yesterday. Well, it was sunny when we arrived. It was a bit rainy in this sort of afternoon, evening. But it's a lovely day today. I can't see a cloud in the sky. And it is all set to be a very nice day. So, yeah, I think it will be a good day for City fans before they even get to the game, which will be nice for them. And then we have the sort of the roof, which was really the story of yesterday, that Real Madrid have asked for the roof to be closed at the Bernabeu. The Bernabeu has been redeveloped. It's sort of all singing, all dancing. The pitch can be removed into like 47 different pieces, and the roof can be is retractable as well. So it's quite interesting because, you know, like when I landed in Madrid, this is obviously the third time in as many years that you've played Madrid. And last year, it was so confident, like all the sort of reporters asking questions to Ancelotti, that there was just this confidence that exuded as you would when you've won the Champions League 14 times. This year is very delicate. Like they're really quite hurt still by City beating them so badly at the Etihad. And after the game last year, I think Federico Valverde came out and said it was the sort of toughest atmosphere he's played in. And one of the sort of Spanish editorials said, like, this is like the Etihad. I think they called it a complete trap and just said it was so hard to play and it was the toughest, the harshest experience Madrid have faced in like decades. And so they're trying to recreate it. At the last game against Athletic, the sort of the fan group held up a banner calling on everyone to wear white against City tonight. So they want the whole stadium in white. And the club have also asked UEFA, and City don't really get a say in it, so they expect UEFA to grant permission for the roof to be closed to sort of add to the noise and make it even more intimidating. So, I mean, it's all just quite funny because they're doing all this for City. Like, City fans will just be very amused by the, you know, that Real Madrid have just turned them into this massive beast that needs to be slain, which is absolutely true in the playing sense, but it's just kind of funny for all the fans out here. But the roof was on last night, and I was told it was kind of very refrigerated. The temperature will probably drop because we're only in the beginning of April, but just for anyone thinking that the roof might cause sort of sweltering conditions, I don't think that will be the case. But very, very interesting nevertheless.
Do you think that City will see that and go, we want to do that with our stadium? Because they're renovating the Etihad every year by the looks of it. You know, they're doing the North Stand. And do you think that City will look at Real Madrid's brand new developed stadium and go,
Yeah. I think they will sort of be seeing that and thinking exactly that, to be honest. I don't know whether they'll actually do it because every stadium's different and, you know, it's all about infrastructure, and you know, City don't have the retractable pitch that Madrid have, but are still very happy. The Bernabeu looks great, and I think the thing is, City's development will put them kind of on a par with that. This kind of like multi entertainment venue that can be used all through the year. Last year we were here, they're just like cranes everywhere and building work, but it looks kind of really spectacular. And I think from sort of the air, it will look even better. It's sort of like the biggest cruise ship you've ever seen. City have kind of been working to, everything sort of fell into place for what they want to do. But you know, they will certainly be looking at what Real have done, because that is the future for all football clubs, really.
Am I right to think that half the Bernabeu was closed last season when they played? 61,000 capacity, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But was it restricted because of the work that they had going on?
I believe so. It's hard because it's been a long redevelopment. So I'm trying to think what...
I'm looking at 2022, that's why. So 2022, it was 61,000. So maybe it was the year before rather than last year. The stats, let's have a good... Yeah, so attendance was 63,000 in May last year.
Yeah.
So then what's the capacity now? So because I thought the Bernabeu had a massive capacity.
Is 81 now.
So that could add to it as well.
Yeah.
The closing the roof, there's going to be 81,000 bonkers Madridians. Is that even a word? Spaniards in there?
Madridistas.
Madridistas.
Yeah.
Giving Madridians. What a pathetic person I am. Madridistas, yeah. Sorry, I've completely ruined their name. I remember there was a gig I went to in Manchester, and Taking Back Sunday was supporting them. And they called us Manchesterians. And I remember going mad about it, saying, we're Mancunians. And I've just done exactly the same. But yeah, so just with the roof closed and 81,000 Madridistas in there, giving City hell. You know, and we're gonna preview the game in the next part, but I just want to add this in. City really need to go in there and score an early goal, don't they, to shut them up?
Or keep the ball or do whatever, basically. I mean, last year was bad enough. It felt like City were really kind of hanging on in the second half when they were 1-0 up. 1-0 down, nearly going 2-0 down. And the crowd played a big part. I know they did in the second leg as well. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about the second leg and sort of how City have an advantage. But they know, the City know, that will be redundant if they don't survive tonight.
And it's interesting that I'm just looking back at the at last season's game there. So it's the semi-final. Vinicius Junior scored in the 36th minute. But if you look at the stats, having not watched the game, the stats sort of tell you that City dominated. City had 10 shots, Real Madrid had 13, but City had 6 on target to Real Madrid's 4. City had 56% possession to 44%. City made more passes. They had a better passing accuracy. And they both conceded the same amount of fouls. And it's like, I remember watching the game, and it was very much very tense. And then when De Bruyne got that equaliser, it helped.
Yeah, I mean, what I remember from the game is City battering them in the opening 20 minutes. And I was looking at each other thinking, yeah, we're not going to swear, but City are playing very, very well here. But then the longer the first half went on, thinking, Real Madrid are happy. Real Madrid are happy to let City be so dominant, and they're just sitting in and waiting to pounce. And then Vinicius scored that absolute wonderful goal. And suddenly Real Madrid just then started sort of moving through the gears, sort of tightening their hold on City. You know, it was like a python just sort of choking the life out of City. And then they came up with a goal of their own to sort of break that hold and that pressure. So it was a thrilling game. And, you know, as thrilling as the 4-0, really, for different reasons. And it was interesting, Guardiola last night saying that he kind of expects more that type of game across both legs rather than like, any team running away with it, because he thinks they're a lot closer than they were last season, just because City aren't coming into the game in as good a shape as they were last year.
Well, that's it, and it's the it's the Bellingham debate as well, and the fact that they've signed Bellingham, they look a lot stronger, and obviously their new stadium and everything. They've not got Karim Benzema anymore, so they've got a brand new front line essentially. But we'll come on to that in part three. So to end part two, I just want to talk to you about City's open training. Now that happened while you were at 37,000 feet traveling on your way to Madrid, but it was reported that Kyle Walker did a solo session just as the media were leaving their 15-minute window of opportunity. Simon Stone tweeted that. So from now the dust has settled and the travelling squad, they're probably, well, they obviously are there, so they'll have arrived last night. What do you know? What's the latest update? I heard you mention before about something about Grealish.
Yeah, so Kyle Walker and Nathan Ake haven't travelled due to injury. Josko Gvardiol was not seen in the 15 minutes of open training that the media have on a Champions League match day. He has travelled, so he is with the squad. He will be part of the squad, but Pep last night said that he is a doubt. So that kind of puts a bit more doubt as to whether he will play. So, I mean, it's not great timing for City to have three of their fullbacks injured at a time when they have to face Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo. But as Pep says, it is what it is. And I think, you know, if Gvardiol doesn't make it, you can expect Rico Lewis and Manu Akanji to play on the wing at fullback. And, you know, what a huge night that will be for Rico Lewis.
We've touched upon Pep's presser earlier on about City coming out fighting basically against Real Madrid. But from what Pep said last night, was he a bit more fired up in the press conference than he usually is?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you know, he almost sort of puts the war paint on the second he steps into the room. He knows he's not sort of the most loved man in Madrid. And at Ancelotti's press conference, one of the questions was all about how Guardiola seems trying to influence referees. So what will you do to try and stop them with this sort of dirty tactics? And thinking, all right, okay, good. It started. It was more because kind of Rodri said, look, we've won the Champions League. I think that's given us kind of more serenity and more composure to be able to play on nights such as this. And you think, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then Pep was kind of like, no, like winning one isn't enough. We've been in the Champions League, like flying the flag for 10 years, but we need to do it for 70 years, like Real and other great teams in Europe have been doing. So we can't afford to sort of sit back and be happy with what we've got. And also we can't afford to sit back and be like, oh, we've got loads of injuries, so we're whatever happens. He was like, we can't defend or sit in for 90 minutes against this team. We need to play how we play, and we need to try and hurt them and to punish them to let them know that we are ready to score goals. And, you know, I think that's what was missing from sort of the City-Arsenal game when both teams cancelled each other out. But like, there wasn't really that threat of I am going to score or I am capable of scoring. And I think, you know, that is what Guardiola wants to bring tonight. He obviously knows the value of having the second leg at home. But like I say, you can't just kind of put all your eggs in that basket and think, oh, we're going to win 4-0 there again, so it doesn't matter. Like, City need to put in a hell of a performance tonight against, you know, one of the best teams in the world. Whoever wins this quarterfinal is going to be kind of nailed on favourite to win. And that is because Real, as well as City, are just so good.
Well, I think that's the thing as well, is to remember, is last season was a semi-final, so it was closer to the end of the season. There was a lot more picture painted, shall we say, than there is at this point in the season. So a lot of fans, you know, Pep coming out fighting and giving the fighting talk is one thing, but we're sort of further away from that end goal than we were this time last year, or well, when this game happened last year.
Yeah. And, you know, Real feel like they've got a lot more to play for after kind of the disappointment of last year. And I'm not sure where it's come from, but it was asked at both press conferences about this idea of sort of Guardiola being a coach and Ancelotti being a manager, as in kind of, you know, Guardiola's a more tactical, technical guy and Ancelotti's the sort of the sort of man who is able to manage the egos in the dressing room. And Guardiola was like, you know, everyone talks about how amazing Jude Bellingham has been this season. He's been amazing because Carlo Ancelotti has found the best position for him. Like, you can't say that he's not a good coach. Or, you know, he's just like, he just kind of focuses on other things. Like, he's an amazing coach, an amazing manager. And that's why, you know, he's got such an incredible record. I think it might be his 200th game in the Champions League or something like that. It's, you do just feel whenever you come to Madrid, like, you are facing the kings of the competition, and Ancelotti just exudes that class and that quality and that style that City are going to have to work really hard to get anything from.
He's like a statesman, isn't he? If you say to me, give me the epitome of a Real Madrid manager, Carlo Ancelotti is the guy you describe. He's well dressed. He looks the part. He's a silver fox. You know, he's an absolute, like, he fits the mold of what you expect the Real Madrid manager to look like.
And it's completely fitting that, you know, he's won the most Champions Leagues. You know, Pep is behind him, as good as Pep is. So yeah, you don't win so many Champions Leagues without being an amazing coach and manager and person.
And it's amazing to think we look back, what, 18 months ago, and he was the manager of Everton. that is something for the history. But you know, when Sky do that, Premier League. Carlo Ancelotti, Everton, what the hell? But anyway, Si, we'll bring part two to an end there. In part three, before we do a preview, I've got a bit of a discussion with you, which we talked about earlier in the week. So look forward to that. We'll see you again in a second. Welcome back to part three of the Talking City podcast. Si, I want to start part three with what I called the fan debate. Now, on Twitter over the weekend, I had a discussion with a guy called Andrew Wolf. Andrew, I hope you're listening because I did give you the link. And that sounds like the police are on their way, Simon, to come and take you away.
Yeah, we might need to be quick with this. It's because I've spoken about the Barcelona fan in Madrid. They want to know where he is. They want to hunt him down.
Well, basically, I was having a back and forth with Andrew Wolf on Twitter. And we were talking about the idea that the strength of the City team this time, if they were to win the treble again. So he said, he was talking to a friend of mine, and he was talking about the United game against Liverpool. And he sort of come back with the fact that Liverpool basically winning the league. And I put, it is City's to lose by virtue that they're the holders of the Premier League. However, I imagine the first team to get knocked out of Europe will win it, as in Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal. City, Arsenal. So I then said, if City win the treble again, will this be bigger than last season's? So, Si, I want to put that question to you. And let me give you a bit of background on why I asked that. Is because last season, it felt like to me that City team was perfect. It had enough elder players, experienced players in it, and enough younger players to bring that rotation and to have that balance through the team. Whereas this season, you've lost Gundogan, you've lost Mahrez. I know Mahrez probably wasn't as key a player as I may look back on and think he was, but I still feel he was a key member of that squad in terms of the full squad. And then, whereas this season, I think that the pattern of players changed slightly. And bringing in players like Doku, and then obviously a lot of the injuries that they've had, City sort of got lucky, but they had a real, that they came to fitness, shall we say, at the right time, whereas now they're struggling with injuries. So do you think, and also, Arsenal are a lot better this season. They've got a year's experience of a title race under their belt. Liverpool have got the added bonus of Klopp's leaving, so we need to win it for him, as Liverpool generally have. They sort of live on these little moments of, we need to do it for the manager, we need to do it for this, we need to do it for that. So And also the FA Cup run, I feel, has been stronger this season. They've had stronger opposition. And the opposition in the Champions League has been equally as strong. So that's my perspective on it. Do you agree or disagree?
I think there is probably a very clear disconnect. Well, it's two separate questions. I think... Is it two separate questions? I think from
a very long question, if not.
Yeah, yeah. I think for fans, nothing will top last year. It was, like you say, it was perfect, but it was perfect for only about 3 months. yeah, February, which is all. I don't think it could be perfect for sort of much longer. Or, you know, for it to be as good. I think if you perfect the whole season, it gets a bit like, not, people can't stay as engrossed in it if you're as good for ages. And, you know, City have not lost a game since Aston Villa in December, but everyone's a bit like, you're still waiting to get good. It felt just like City really took control, and also, you know, straight after the Premier League charges, so there was a bit of Alvinizing there. There was Pep's happy flowers rant, which kind of really tucks everyone up as well. And there was just this feeling of like, oh my word, I think they're going to do it. As it came creeping on, they were an unstoppable force. You know, they just destroyed Arsenal at the Etihad when they needed to. And then getting over the line against United in the FA Cup final, getting over the line against Inter. Like, you couldn't have scripted it better, I don't think, from where they were in February. And it was kind of even sweeter, the fact that they beat United and, you know, beating Inter as well. But also beating Real and Bayern on the way. And, you know, for those fans that were in Istanbul, you know, I've sort of spoken to a few out here who have watched the Netflix show, and they say, you know, it that last episode just like really gets you. Because it meant so much to so many people, and they're just like unforgettable memories. And I don't think it's a bit like the Premier League title. So many fans just like, there's no getting better than Aguero, and not just because of the circumstances, but because it was the first time. You know, the first time is always memorable, and for the Champions League being a competition that City have sort of tried to win so often and not won, it was kind of even sweeter. What I would say is, from a team perspective, winning the treble this year would just blow last year out the water. I know you kind of have to get there to do it and get over the line. And once you've got over the line, it's easier. But to do it again in back-to-back seasons is insane. Like, only two teams in English football have ever won the treble. Could say you do it back-to-back. Like, no one's ever come close for a reason. And City have got injuries. The team is not as good as it was last year. But they're just finding a way to stay in. And, you know, even like we spoke to Grealish at the weekend, he's found it really tough this season mentally. You don't factor that in. Like, that's what Guardiola's been banging on about all season. Like, he's so happy with where his team are because of where they could have been, and everyone could have been like, well, yeah, you're never going to win the treble again, are you? Like, it's understandable you're not going to reach that level. But they're there. Like, it is really, really remarkable. And if they go on to win the treble, then it will trump last season, absolutely. But at the same time, City fans are not going to be as joyous at Wembley celebrating a second Champions League as they were in Istanbul celebrating the first, because you can't kind of put into words how much that kind of novelty factor comes into it.
No, speaking to Fernando about it over the weekend, he's a season ticket holder at City, and he was saying that him and his friend have booked three hotels at Wembley, the same hotel three times, for the FA Cup semi, the FA Cup final, the Champions League final, on the anticipation that they get there, because it's like, it's at Wembley, so it's, you know, easy way to get there, easier to get there than having to book flights and everything. But with the addition of the Super Cup that City won, and then obviously the Club World Cup sort of factored into this season, I know it's sort of in the calendar year, but also this season, they didn't have that last season. So to win the treble this season, and on top of that, the Club World Cup and the Super Cup, you know, and then hopefully they want to win the Charity Shield, which I don't think they've won recently, have they?
No,
said they've not won it.
They've lost the last three or four, yeah. Yeah, but to win the five biggest trophies you can win in a single year is unheard of. It would just be absolutely out of this world if City managed to achieve it. But at the same time, the fans will always hold Istanbul up as, you know, their greatest moment. And that's completely acceptable as well.
And as well this year, it's 25 years since Gillingham. 25 years since that, you know, that Paul Dickov moment, as it's remembered, or the save from...
It is. And people will sort of talk about that. But I think 25 is only much more significant than 24 in, like, our heads. You know, last year it was like, it's 24 years since that. Or, you know, it's 20 since we got promoted to the Premier League and didn't get relegated or whatever that is. So, you know, I don't think the fans will be like, oh, it's more special because it's 25. They will just sort of view it for what it is. But, you know, it will be kind of, I probably wrote 24 years since Gillingham last year in my copy, because it, you know, it was a thing, and it will be again, but it's, I was thinking last night, actually, on the metro back, I was having a conversation with someone, and it was like, you think back to earlier this season, and you know, it straight after City won the Champions League last year, there were sort of high, big talks in Abu Dhabi with the ownership and Pep and people, and they basically said they want to have the sort of Champions League domination that they've had in the Premier League for years. They want to dominate the Champions League, and that doesn't mean they're going to win it every year, but it means sort of get into finals. And, you know, a bit like 2021, they got the final. 2022, they were kick away from the final. 2023, they won it. 2024, they want to be there again. So, you know, I think because they're not as good a team this year, they've got more chance of winning the Champions League than they have the Premier League. And so not winning the Premier League would obviously be a huge disappointment, but if they were able to win back-to-back Champions Leagues, that would be, again, like, seriously elevating this team in the list of sort of the greatest ever teams that we've seen in football.
And in addition to all of that, if they win the Premier League this season, they'll be the first team to win it four in a row.
Well, yeah, that is. So, you know, if they win one of the two, then they're getting bumped up in history. Mm. So there's plenty to go at. But it does feel like this Madrid game is pretty mammoth, not just for the tie itself, but for what it could mean and bring.
And Pep Guardiola has to keep all the lid on all of that, because you guys are going to be asking those questions from now on. Is the treble going to happen? And he's going to snap like he snapped at Joe last year. But anyway, yeah. Si, before we bring the pod to an end, then, we need to preview Real Madrid. We've done a lot of talk about this game, but let's get into the nuts and bolts of it, Si. Who is in your starting 11? Who do you think Pep will pick? Who do you think Pep should pick? The two different questions, because who he should pick is usually who he doesn't pick. So,
yes.
What are we saying?
Yeah. So, I mean, I will leave out the most interesting position, but I think with the Guardiola news, you go Lewis at right back, Stones, Diaz, Akanji at left back. Akanji did really well at left back against Real Madrid last year, because Ake was out for that. You go Rodri, you go Phil Foden, Kevin De Bruyne. Yes, they can play in the middle together. You have Bernardo Silva and Jack Grealish on the wings. Bernardo kind of coming back to help with you know, help Rodri as well as Rico Lewis pushing up when he wants to. Although not that much because he's got Vinicius to deal with. And then you have Erling Haaland up front. In net is the most interesting because does he stick with Stefan Ortega or does he return to Ederson? Ederson was brilliant at the Bernabeu last year. He was brilliant in the Champions League latter stages. He saved his best performance for the final where he was, you know, Rodri was the match winner, but Ederson was the reason that City won the game. And, you know, he is the number one, but he's not played since Liverpool last month. And Stefan Ortega has been really, really good and is in rhythm. I just think with everything else that City have got going on and all the defensive issues, I think Ortega probably edges Ederson because you want as much continuity as possible. And you know, he Ortega deserves it. He's played really well. He's done everything they've asked him to do. And he's in good form. So I kind of think that might be a call that, well, whoever he picks is going to raise a few eyebrows, but I kind of feel like Ortega's the smart choice.
No, I agree. And I think it would be, I know football isn't about fairness, but I do think it would be unfair on Ortega, who's been, I think he's been sensational. And I think I said this to you recently, that in any other team in the Premier League, he'd be the number one. Because yeah. He's that good. And he's probably the best number two in the league. Maybe Liverpool fans would say Kelleher is, but he's probably the best number two, best deputising goalkeeper in the league. And the fact that he's stepped in, and you wouldn't know that City had a second keeper in net because he's been that good. The turns he's been doing, the shimmies that he did. I think it was either against Arsenal or Villa that I saw, and the ball was coming to him. The attacker was running and he basically just did a fake shot, basically. And the attacker jumped. It looked so natural, though. You wouldn't think that was the goalkeeper doing it. You'd think it was, you know, he's playing five-a-side with his mates and he's just absolutely done him. And you're like, that was a very important moment in a very important game. And he's just made the guy look silly.
Yeah.
I think if Ederson's going to come back in, he'll probably come back in against Luton at the weekend. Give him a, shall we say, an easier game to play. But then it's the toss-up of who will play in the return leg against Real Madrid. So whoever plays tonight, I think will play in goal in the home tie.
Yeah, but I also think if you take Ortega out tonight, then you're saying, yeah, you're off in the summer. Because, you know, there is a contract offer on the table for him and he's not taking it because he would like to be a number one. You know, if there's a chance of that at City, then great. But if they're saying, no, it's a big game, pal, Ederson's coming in, then I think you're saying, yeah, you're off in the summer, which would be a big shame and, you know, big shoes to fill because it is fiendishly difficult to find, like you say, the kind of best number two goalkeeper in the league.
Yeah, and potentially it could be shop window time as well. If you know, if he does want to leave, perhaps we put him in the shop window to say, well, we're going to get rid of you in the summer. Here's your opportunity to show how good you are so we can get as much money as we can for you. On the assumption that his contract isn't ending, I haven't checked that, but I'm assuming his contract hasn't come to an end.
No. But
the next question. Oh, sorry, go on.
Well, he came as a free as well, so any money they get will be very, very much thankfully received.
That's great, and there'll be a lot of teams out there looking for number ones, and he is number one caliber. And I don't mean second tier teams. I'm talking elite teams.
Bayern wanted him last summer. So that's the level you're talking about.
Mm. So he might be playing against Bayern next month or later on this month.
Yeah.
Playing for his contract. Right. So before we go then, Si, to finish up, the one discussion I wanted to have with you is Foden versus Bellingham. Now, we talked about this on a previous pod about the England setup. Do you build the team around Foden? Do you build the team around Bellingham? Because Bellingham sort of plays in that number 10. Foden's position is around that central area of the pitch. We're now going to see them go face-to-face, head-to-head or whatever. How do you see this battle going?
If there is even
a battle there.
Yeah, I mean, for the first time, I think Phil Foden's an old man in a debate. He's 23.
Experience-wise, though, as well.
Yeah. Bellingham's 20. Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. And, you know, how Bellingham will be kind of pushing up against the centre-halves, and Rodri and Phil Foden at the other end will be pushing up against the centre-halves. I think it will be... we, as English media, tend to speak about our English talents more than anyone else, and sort of Jude Bellingham is an English talent at, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world. So it's very exciting to see him. But at the same time, this has been the season of Phil Foden. This has been the season of Foden saying, you know what, Kevin De Bruyne's the main man. Not this season, he's not. I'm going to make sure that I am the automatic pick for Guardiola. And you saw that with the team selection at Palace. So it's in Foden's hands because, you know, it feels like the England team is set up for Bellingham, and Bellingham is the star, and Bellingham is, you know, undoubtedly a generational talent, but Foden has kind of never really made a place his own in the England team. But if you've got a guy who's outperforming Bellingham in a team that could win the treble, again, retain the treble, you would be an absolute fool not to get him into your team. And, you know, every performance that Foden delivers on the big stage, Champions League nights, when everyone's watching, is only going to grow that clamour for him to be one of the main men with England. But, you know, it's exciting. I think English football, you know, should celebrate tonight. I know, you know, plenty of fans will not want to sort of support City because they support their rivals. But, like, it is amazing for English football and Rico Lewis. Like, if Rico Lewis starts, have Lewis, Foden and Bellingham all playing in essentially a Champions League final. I know it's a quarter final, but it's a meeting of the two best teams in Europe playing three young English players. It's amazing. And, you know, all credit must go to the people that have been involved in developing those talents and nurturing them. But, you know, all you can hope for is that they all show what they can do. But City fans will hope that Bellingham doesn't quite show what he can do.
Yeah, hopefully over two legs he has a poor game, but saves it for England. Outside of Bellingham then, who is Real Madrid's most dangerous? Vinicius Junior, I would imagine, is the answer. But you know, where does City need to defend, or where do they need to tighten up to ensure that that second leg is in their hands?
Yeah, I think if Lewis does play at right back, I think he just needs to be super careful with his positioning, because when he played against Villa, he was really good going forward and linking up well with Foden. But it was on his side that the Villa goal came from, because he's not quite as good at playing the John Stones role as John Stones is. And, you know, there will be Stones there to help out and cover, but I think City just need to be super on it. Guardiola kind of admitted it last night. He was like, there's no one that can sort of defend against Vinicius as well as Walker can. So we're going to have to find a way. And how well they find that alternative way will probably go a long way to determining the tie.
Yeah, so last but not least, then, Si, score prediction. What do we reckon? Are we going for a 1-1 like last season? Or do you think that there'll be a winner on the night?
I think either 1-1 or 1-0 to Madrid. And I think City would be happy with both. I think if Madrid win by more than one, then it's going to be very, very difficult to turn it round. But anything else will be seen as a positive for City, I think.
No, I agree. I think, obviously, not losing will be Pep's modus operandi. Yeah. But as you say, there's no away goal rule benefit other than it being a draw. You know, there's no benefit to that in terms of the second leg. So 1-0 or a 1-1, I agree. But if City can get an early goal and silence that crowd and then defend for their lives for 90 minutes, that would be beneficial. The City fans out there will obviously want to watch an entertaining game, but equally they want to come back knowing that they can take Madrid to the cleaners at the Etihad like they did last season. Whether they do, it's seldom to be seen. But me, as watching it as a neutral, I can see City getting a draw and then beating Madrid 2-0 or 2-1 at the Etihad and going through to that semi-final against either Arsenal or Bayern Munich, who also played tonight. And obviously Saka, if he's fit, will be playing another English, young English talent on the pitch. So,
and Declan Rice. Anything,
Declan Rice, of course, yeah. Forgot about Declan Rice. And then Ramsdale on the bench, maybe. So another English player that'll be shining in the summer, hopefully. But anyway, Sat, anything to say before we go?
No, just very much, you know, it's always big to come to Madrid. It always feels like, you know, a real football match and a real experience. And one of those days where you feel very lucky to be doing the job that you're doing.
Just the way that the sun is resting on your face now, you look a bit like Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah. I feel like Ziggy Stardust.
Anyway, that'll be it for this edition of the Talking City podcast. It is a day late simply because Simon was travelling yesterday, so we decided to record this morning from sunny Madrid. Don't forget, listeners, if you are interested in NordVPN, it's nordvpn.com/talkingcity. You can get 4 extra months on a 2-year plan, 30-day money-back guarantee. If you are travelling and you need to protect yourself, well, NordVPN is the one. If you can get a bit of discount, then happy days. We will be back on Friday to preview City's game with Luton and bring you all the news and gossip from the Madrid game. And Simon will give us a full breakdown on that. So until then, Simon, it'll be probably Joe back, but it'll be you and one other. Until then, see you very soon. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review if you wish. And as I say, we will see you on Friday. Doodle pip.